Right. I'm Morgan. I'm an alcoholic. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thank you. Sorry. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic and sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversations and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 12. Please welcome our panel this evening. That's our own Grant M. and John Q. from Delaware. And I will read the first, Grant or John, which of you would like to go first?
I can get us started.
Okay, sounds good. I will read the first paragraph and I will screen share that. I can figure out how again, sorry. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. One, page 89, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion, carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends, this is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. All right, Grant?
Hey, I'm Grant. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date, March 19, 2010. I have a home group, this home group, Simple Actions, and a sponsor who I probably need to call more than I do, but he knows I'm alive. And step 12, man, was definitely a step that terrified me at first. And I don't just mean like before I did any of the steps. I mean, when I got to step 12, having done the prior 11 steps, I was like, I don't know what to tell anybody. I don't know how to help anybody. And my first sponsor was kind enough to say, well, you still have a book, right? You didn't lose the book in the process of doing all this. And I was like, no. And he's like, well, then you have everything you need. And if you're confused about anything, call me. And that was reassuring. I know coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, I think probably one of the things that's most pertinent to me about doing the work of this step was what it describes in the bedevilments earlier in the book, you know, prey to depression, feeling of uselessness, not really being able to help other people. And that's how I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. And you guys showed me, and the help of a sponsor and the development of a relationship with a God, my own understanding, how to set aside my fears and resentments so that I could help another person. And when I say set aside, I don't mean like hide them. I mean, set aside the fear and the resentment I had about them so that I could use those experiences to share with another guy how he might understand alcoholism better and might identify with his own alcoholism. And so that was a really powerful change for me, because when I came in here, like, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't really want to do any of this stuff. And I was really just sort of like lost in life in general. So like to try and do any of this stuff and think that it was going to work was just this horrific experience initially, because I was just like, I don't think it's going to work for me. And I don't know how I can do all of this. And like, I can barely show up to work on time. How am I going to like show up and be helpful to another person who's like suffering from alcoholism? Like just way too many thoughts about it. And it was really the man who's going to join me tonight, like watching his example You know, like I used to go to a couple meetings in the Philadelphia area where I got sober, and I would watch John approach guys and describe alcoholism and describe his own experiences and then offer them a solution, offer them a sense of hope and a sense of direction. And I was like, wow, that is just like amazing what that guy does with these newcomers. I wonder if I could do that. And so like, it was literally that, like I watched this guy do it a bunch and I just started to mimic what he was doing. And before long, I figured out how to like help newcomers. That said, there's a part of this reading that also reminds me of how much of my fellowship that's grown up around me is about the men and women who are like in the same place as me, who have been doing this for a little while. They've been through sponsorship and we meet after a meeting or we meet for coffee or we get lunch or we have a conversation about something that's really deep in our heart that we're scared to tell our sponsors or we're scared to tell other people. And we're able to find a connection with one another and find our way back to how God's going to help us through it. And that relationship too develops. And so like, I have a great friendship of fellows in AA who I can reach out to for any matters, whether it's because my sponsor's not available or because I'm just not willing to call my sponsor. Cause let's be honest, like that happens sometimes, like stuff happens and I don't want to tell him, you know what I mean? And I'm grateful for the fact that I have other AAs who are like, well, this is the truth about that. They're not going to let me off the hook. And they hold me just as accountable as my sponsor would. And it's that process that's developed great friendships that I have people that I can really trust today, because that was probably the biggest hang up coming in the door was that I really just didn't want to trust anybody. I didn't want to trust people with my broken life. And thankfully I have, because that has restored my life. So I'll let John take over from there. Thanks.
Thank you, Grant. And thank you for inviting me to be with your friends. I speak for all of our, Grant and my mutual friends, that we're very unhappy that he spends so much time with you and not with us. So we miss him. And he's a good guy. And I've had the good fortune to stay in touch with him and get to see him a couple times on his trips up north here and get to know his kids and his new expanded family. And it's been pretty cool. So I'm an alcoholic. I came into AA as a young man. I never really had much of a long run in alcoholism. It was just miserably messy. And mostly through my college years. And when I got out of school, I got into AA. My father was an AA. My mother was an Al-Anon. And I came to AA and I got involved in going to meetings. I had a lot of friends. I first lived in Detroit and then moved to Pittsburgh. Met some good guys there. One guy in particular I've stayed in touch with. There've been long gaps and we haven't seen each other, but when we do, it's just an amazing, amazing experience. And I grew up in AA and now I've grown old in AA, and it's a nice place to be. And I know people that I've known for a very long time, and many of us have gone through the experience of having a significant immersion in the early years and then thinking things were okay and kind of getting away from the meetings and getting on with life and raising kids and making money and, you know, accumulating a bunch of stuff. And I got away from the rooms. And I think during that period of time, it was a period of time when there was a great, an interesting evolution of a studying of the book, or maybe I just never really did it. And I'd say about 10 years ago, I went through a divorce And, you know, I spent all the money that I had accumulated and was really in a pretty hard place. That's about when I met Grant. And I would go to the meeting, the 7 a.m. meeting, and there was a guy there named Blake. Blake was around just a few years, you know, and I, at that point, I'd been around a very long stretch, and he knew the book. And in our little group there in the morning, so we would read How It Works at the beginning of the meeting, and at the end, we would read The Road to Happy Destiny, the last part of page 164. And one day he handed the sheet to me. They gave it to him to read, and he said, "Here, why don't you read this?" And I thought this guy didn't have any friends, and you know, I thought, well, I'm going to be this guy's friend, so I'll, you know, sit with him and get to know him. And so, you know, I mean, fellowship's a big part of the program, but he knew the book. And what he did was he got together with guys that read the book and talked about it. And I read this and said, you know, you can't give away what you don't have. And I thought to myself, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. You know, I mean, it's a miracle I never drank or took drugs. You know, I have absolutely no idea why, other than through the fellowship. And in my home life, it wasn't, you know, the answer when you were having a bad day wasn't, you know, have a drink. You know, that just wasn't part of the fabric of our life. I don't know. I was into this for a while, and I took a trip down to my then estranged but now former wife moved to North Carolina and took one of my kids there. You know, she was in the eighth grade, and like I didn't, you know, I didn't really have too much at that point. You know, it wasn't like I could jump on a plane whenever I wanted to get down, or you know, have send her up. But I'd get down and see her, and you know, I went to a meeting, and I met a guy there, and he took me. He said to me, I was really in a lot of pain, and he said, "Have you written a fourth step about this?" And he took the time to take me through the fourth step, and I wrote, and you know, it was just a very interesting experience. And I had done the fourth step, you know, a number of times before that, and I knew that this was a very effective tool or what have you. And he took me through that. And one of the things that he said to me, which was the most interesting and valuable thing, that he said, "John," he said, "you'll learn more about the fourth step and getting through these things, helping other people do it, than you will doing it yourself. And don't be afraid to make mistakes. Just try it and do it." And I came back, and it was such an impactful day. We spent 4 hours working on it, and that's when I began really starting to work with new people. And I would listen to them in the meetings, and I would listen to people that were really jammed up with fear, and I would talk to them, and I would say, you know, in the book it talks about what to do about fear. And or if they were jammed up with resentments or, you know, shameful things, and started doing that. And that was really a huge turning point for me in getting going on helping other people. And what Grant, you know, what it talks about in here is the fellowship. I don't know. It grew. I don't know how it grew, but it's there. And I have very close friends, and you know, men and women that go to this group, and we love each other and we care about each other. And Grant's part of that group, and you know, we miss him. But you know, like, and there are other people that have moved on, and you know, it's always great to hear about him. And whenever I see Grant, and I tell our friends, "Hey, you know, I saw Grant this week, and I saw his little kids. I mean, they're beautiful, and the people just ignite with interest and enthusiasm. So I don't know. I guess I'm going on a little bit too long, but I guess we've got some more reading to do here. I'm really sure what the format is.
That's all right. Thank you, John. Number 2, page 91. See your man alone if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit, but say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he is in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his. And I'll cover number 3 as well. When he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of a spree. We suggest you do this as we have done it in the chapter on alcoholism. If he is alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. If you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Show him, from your own experience, how the queer mental condition surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't, at this stage, refer to this book unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusions. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that possibly he can, if he is not too alcoholic. But insist that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself. And Grant?
Oh man, I'm just like flooded with memories of like early sobriety and like how like just how many people like speakers and just people sharing in meetings where they were just telling that story, you know, like I just heard so many people describe just how bad their alcoholism was. But it didn't sink in, right? Like I was like so many guys I've talked to, you know, where I'm like, yeah. Like it's kind of a mess. But I'll figure a way out of this, you know, like, and things are still okay. Like I still have a job and I have keys to a car and I can get places and I have a relationship and it's all going to be fine. Like I'll be okay. But I didn't really appreciate at the time, like it was killing me, but I didn't appreciate how much it was killing me that every day, like I didn't even want to get out of bed. Like I didn't even want to get started. I didn't even want to try it a day. And once I got going and I got to work or on the way to work, even like I was thinking of 100 ways to just end it that day or hoping that something horrible would happen so that I didn't have to go on any further. Like that's how I felt like just every single day until I really tried Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I mean by that is I really got close to somebody. I asked for help from a sponsor and I started to read this book and have an experience at a psychic change. And I was like 6 months dry before I even asked for help. And what had happened was I was at the same meeting I'd been on Tuesday nights at 6 o'clock for months with the same crazy people who for the most part, I didn't understand what any of them were talking about. And they were all talking to me. which I found like frustrating and amusing at the same time. And this guy just probably third or fourth time I heard him share this story of like, he went on and on in and out of AA. And he had this moment where he goes drunk. He smashed his fiance's wrist against his forehead, like trying to get her to hit him. And he just like smashed her wrist until he broke her wrist. And he found himself in the back of a cop car, handcuffed, and everything changed. And then he described the hope and the benefit of recognizing the hopelessness, the absolute hopelessness of his situation, and a willingness to do what we do here. And I was just like, whoa, wait a minute. Like, you were that same guy and you're not that guy anymore? I got to talk to you after this meeting. Like, that was what ran through my head. And then like, there was people who knew him, like all talking to him after the meeting. And like, I was doing everything I could to get close to him, like short of like checking people. And I like finally waded through all the other people talking to him. And I was just like, hey, I don't know. Like, I don't know what you've done here. I don't know what you have. I don't even know what I'm asking. But what I do know is I don't have what you have, and it's killing me. And much like John just described, it was that page 164, like probably a week before this happened, I was asked to read in a meeting. And like the whole meeting, while people were sharing, I wasn't really paying attention to the shares. So I was just reading through it over and over and over again. And like, I wept as I read it at the end of the meeting, because I realized that there was something here I wasn't getting. And to this day, like when I have the opportunity, if there's a newcomer in the meeting or somebody I know who's new, and I have the opportunity to ask them to read that, I will try to get them to read that reading, just because it was so meaningful to me. And you know, like that's what I try to do today. Like I try to share like how either horrific it was, because the guy's just like defeated by alcoholism, or I try to tell funny stories because the guy's having, you know, a good day, and he doesn't, you know, it doesn't have really a care in the world, but he knows that he maybe belongs here, you know. Because I mean, there's lots of funny stories too. Like, I mean, shoot, falling over fences, floating in pools with kegs, you know, doing a lot of other chaotic stuff that was a lot of fun. And it's a good time too, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't all devastation, but at the end it was. At the end it all fell apart. And my hope is that any new person in AA can hear that, you know. Hopefully I can share that message with them so that like they can identify, because I know I struggle to identify. You know, people told me all the time, like, identify and don't compare out. I'm like, that's nice that you said that, but I'm like struggling to even open my mind to that, you know. But it was just the repeated efforts of people to share what they've been through, that I was just finally like, you know, I am like these people and I do belong here. Maybe I could try what they do, you know. And I didn't even understand what that was. Like, people were telling me all the time, people were sharing in a meeting, get a sponsor, do 12 steps, get a home group, get involved, do all these things. But like, my mind couldn't hear that, right? Because I was just so wrapped up in the tension of what was my current situation, right? And even today, like 11 years sober, like I can fall into that trap, you know what I mean? Like, lose track of like what it is I'm trying to do here, lose track of what it is I'm trying to keep my mind open to in terms of God's relationship and my relationship to you. And it's these things that like bring me closer to recognizing that like my alcoholism is still real. And so hopefully, if you're new, or if you're even struggling, you know what I mean? Like, I think that's a part of this thing that like it's missed sometimes, is like there's people all over AA who have lost touch with what they're doing and why they're here and their alcoholism, and they're suffering from alcoholism and they don't know it. Like, I've been in that place, you know what I mean, at different times of my sobriety. And I think it's is valuable to let the newcomer know that we're here for them, but it's also valuable to let those people who are still here trying to stay here know that they could get out and get back to helping the newcomer again. Because like John said, like those moments, like sitting with guys and their four step and their fifth step and talking them through that, like that made my four step and fifth step so much clearer. You know, it made my sixth and seventh step so much clearer. It made me more willing to make amends that I wasn't previously willing to make. And so that was amazing too. So I'll let you go on, John.
I'm enjoying listening to you. So, you know, the early years for me in AA were, it wasn't all comfortable, but it wasn't that bad either. You know, it was pretty, it was like crazy. I guess what I'm talking about is it really wasn't until much later on that I got to the a new level of desperation after having been around for a while. And I recall having an idea pass through my mind that it said, I'm gonna try what it says in this book. I'm just gonna do it. You know, I'm gonna learn. I'm gonna go with it. And at the same time, it was the first time in my life that I sought outside help. That I went to a therapist, and I went there for a divorce, because of the separation in Pennsylvania, you know, the spouse that's getting tossed can cause a couple marriage counseling sessions. And so I said, I wanted this. And so my now ex-wife, agreed to it. And we went down and we met this guy, Rick, a psychiatrist in the program. Dr. Ron suggested that we go see this guy, Rick, down in Philadelphia, that he was good dealing with people with alcoholism. And one of the things that he said was that, I could just like get divorced, move on, and, it would just be a matter of time. I'd be back getting divorced again. Or I could change. And I knew that you could change. I knew that it was possible to change. And I knew that I had slipped back. And it was at that point that I decided to open my mind up as much as I possibly could. And, you mentioned God and, I sought a lot of ways to get peace of mind in my life. I've tried, different kinds of meditation. I was raised, went to a Catholic school, for the first 6 years. And when I was old enough to make my own decision, I stopped going to church and just was never really that interested in it. I tried it a couple times as an adult in different places. I found that for me, the reaching the connection with the higher power, or whatever, is here in AA. One of the things that you said that was really interesting, Grant, that it reminded me was, there's a guy named Michael who's been around. He's been around longer than me. He's a TV guy. And he said, he called me up. He knew I was in trouble. We had a close mutual friend, Rob, and Rob was, Rob and his now ex-wife and my ex-wife and I, we were all friendly and we spent a lot of time together. And Rob really knew what was going on. And he called Mike. And Mike called me up one day and he said, I just want you to know we're here for you. We'll help you. And I didn't even know I needed help, and I was so uncomfortable. And, you know, I just, what I did, I ended up, we had a beautiful home, you know, in a beautiful neighborhood, kids in private school, all that stuff. And I ended up in a third floor walk up on a busy street apartment, you know, and it was pretty like what the hell happened, you know, and going out, going to the club for dinner on Saturday night. And then the next Saturday night, I'm going to the diner where Grant and I had breakfast with his kids a couple of weeks ago. And so it was tough. And what I've done is to basically go back to my, what I learned as a child, the prayers I learned as a child. I've said every kind of prayers. I've had like long conversations with God, you know, like, you know, how about this? How about that? Asking for petitions, asking for things. At this point, I just say things that I memorized when I was a child. It had been so long I said them, I had to go back and look them up. And that's what I do. And when I meet a new guy, and, you know, and he tells me he's going through divorce, or he's going through, you know, he's got to get his wife back or not going to get his wife back. And I just say, listen, man, I don't have an answer for you for that. Or he's got to get his job back or something like that. I say, I don't really know what to tell you about that. You know, like some guys come in here and, you know, all the work stuff goes great. Other guys come in and all the family stuff goes great. But I got to tell you, we got to stop drinking, you know, and we got to get connected. And this is a really good place. This is a place that works very, very well. And if you want to do that, we'll help you. And we haven't done this since COVID, but all the time we would take guys out to breakfast, you know, after the meeting, you know, be like a 7 a.m. meeting, and we'd go out. And if there was a new guy, you know, it might be a Tuesday morning or a Thursday morning or something like that. We'd go out and we would just go to work late, you know, and we'd talk to these guys. We'd listen to them and, you know, and you'd hear like some stories that were hysterical. I mean, crying, laughing so hard. And a lot of these guys are my friends now. And I, you know, and, you know, some of them do, you know, go through the steps and some of them don't. They help people other ways. I don't know, but, you know, it's very valuable to listen when I'm with a new person. And when it talks in here about going and meeting them and all this kind of stuff, that hasn't been my experience. My experience is I've met new people in AA in the rooms. It's like, and I don't know if I'm falling down on that, but that's the way it's been, is that I meet them, by the time I meet them and they're ready for help, many times they're coming out of a rehab and, you know, they've been through that. So it's not, but I, you know, I've also been to go see my friends that I've known for years that are in hotels that are drunk and, you know, trying to drag them out of there. And that doesn't usually work out too well either. But anyway, I tried to prepare for this, but I don't think I'm doing that great. But anyway, I'll pass.
All right. Thank you, John. Everybody, before I do the next reading, in recognition of the seventh tradition, I've included or added the PayPal link to the chat. And I will pick up with the next reading that is on and like a genius, I just closed that that tab, but here we are. This is from page 92. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk about the conditions of body and mind which accompany it. keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it will serve some good purpose. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, of the traits of the alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him that he is alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he has become very curious to know how you got well. Let him ask you that question if he will. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself and that he live by spiritual principles. When dealing with such a person, you would better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. There is no use arousing any prejudice he may have against certain theological terms and conceptions about which he may already be confused. Don't raise such issues, no matter what your own convictions are. Outline the program of action, explaining how you made a self-appraisal, how you straightened out your past, and why you are now endeavoring to be helpful to him. It is important for him to realize that your attempt to pass this on plays a vital part in your own recovery. Actually, he may be helping you more than you are helping him. Make it plain he is under no obligation to you, that you hope only that he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. Suggest how important it is that he place the welfare of other people ahead of his own. Make it clear that he is not under pressure, that he needn't see you again if he doesn't want to. You should not be offended if he wants to call it off, for he has helped you more than you have helped him. If your talk has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, you have perhaps made a friend. Maybe you have disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. This is all to the good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. He will be more likely to follow your suggestions. All right, Grant?
Yeah, the part that jumps out right away is he's helped you more than you have helped him. My first sponsor, this guy Nito, he used to always say that, like every time we met afterwards, he would thank me and say, I've helped him more than he's helped me. And I didn't understand that at the time. Like, it didn't even make sense. I'm like, what are you even talking about? I don't even know if anybody's helping anybody in this whole experience. But the truth is having walked with other men through these steps, he's absolutely correct. Like, every time I talk to another drunk about what's going on with them or do step work with them, carry this message, like, it always helps me. It helps me get clarity on my own character defects. It helps me get clarity on the inventory that I'm not addressing. And I'm letting it run wild and I'm not paying any attention to it and giving it to God and talking to other people about my dirty behavior, right? Like, so it's so brilliant, like how much working with a new guy helps me. And you know, the other part you read in there, now I actually got to open the book. I was kind of keeping track of everything, but too many ideas hit me with that one.
Here you go.
That's fine. Either way. That part where it talks about outline the program of action, you know, like that's something I like to do. So I typically, like the first couple of times I might meet with somebody, I'll talk about stories and stuff like that. And then I'll try to invite them like either to a lengthy phone call or like, especially during COVID, it's usually a lengthy phone call, or like before that, like coffee or a meal or whatever. Like, hey, you want to meet me at this donut shop? You want something like that? And then I outline these things for them. And usually the conversation starts somewhere along the lines of, hey, do you have this book? Have you had a chance to read it? what's your impression about it? Like, because I want to get a feel, like, is this something that this person wants to do? Because there's lots of people that come to Alcoholics Anonymous who are not ready to do anything about alcoholism. There's lots of people who come to Alcoholics Anonymous who just don't think they have a problem with alcohol. They have other issues. So to sort of sort all that out is the first part. You know, like, is it really drugs? Is it really problems with your spouse, or is it alcoholism? Like, let's sort that out first. And then if we sort that out, then it's like, let's outline this program of action. And, you know, can I do it in a plain way, right? Like, can I do it in a way that's not like excessively theoretical? Like, my significant other who's on here somewhere will often remind me, like, why don't you just use the language of the heart? Why don't you just talk with some depth and weight about your own experience rather than, you know, preaching to these people, because they're probably not going to hear that. And she's been an amazing person to ground me in the fundamentals of AA, because sometimes I just get carried away with my own self-importance when it comes to carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, I've done this, look how great I am, you should just do what I say. And she's like, they can't hear that, you know. And she, because of the great example she is in helping women in Alcoholics Anonymous, like, she's really shown me a lot of ways in which, like, really simple ways of showing them grace and mercy as they get sober, teaches them so many more lessons about how this program and this way of life will fix what they think is broken in their lives, rather than pointing out what is broken in their lives. So I always am grateful for her example. And this really comes to bear in the sense that, like, there's lots of times I've stopped guys after a meeting because of their share or whatever, and been like, you're not getting it, recounting all the ways in which they're not paying attention to what we're saying. And there's been lots of times where I've had the opportunity to say, hey, I hear what you're saying. Like, I used to really feel that way too. And this is how, and, you know, like, I always thought people done me wrong too. And when I can get to that level, then the other person can hear me, you know, the new guy can hear me. He can hear, like, oh, this guy gets it. He gets how I feel like a victim. And whether that guy's wrong or not, what's important is he understands that I understand the game. I understand where he's coming from, and that I can then describe how I don't do that anymore. And it's not just that I'm saying I don't do that anymore, like, that I'm actually able to say, hey, look, last week I wanted to, you know, blame all of the people in my household for all my problems. And I had a moment where I just went and I prayed and maybe talked to another alcoholic and got some clarity about how I felt like I was justified in my own resentments. And they talked me down off the ledge on that. And then I was able to come back in to the room and show the people that I love them, rather than explaining to them why they're making my life difficult, right? And that's the change that occurs as a result of doing these things. And I'm an alcoholic, right? Like, to this day, I still have those thoughts, feelings, beliefs, but I don't have to act on them. And I had, like, it was a huge, huge change to understand that I don't have to act that way anymore because I feel that way. And that there's a way to deal with the feelings so that I can act better, right? And if you're new, like, that doesn't make sense. Like, none of that, I remember being like, to my first sponsor, like, what does any of this have to do with alcoholism? Like, I drink too much and then I get into trouble. He's like, yeah, but what about when you're not drinking? Do you find yourself suddenly in arguments with people you never planned to be in an argument with? I'm like, yeah, like, I chew my mom out like 3 times a week because she's always asking me how I'm going to fix stuff in her house. She never invites me over to just, like, have a meal and hang out and talk. She's just always got some project. He's like, right, exactly. So you have a resentment. And how are you going to deal with that? Rather than getting her to change, how are you going to change? And it was those conversations, those kind of things that like helped me to see that really a lot of my problem is not just from drinking too much. A lot of my problem is from the fact that like I think I deserve something all the time, whether it's other people's time, other people's appreciation, whatever. And so then I act out trying to get those things, right? And honestly, being able to show the new guy that thought pattern is how I get him to see that there's a solution to alcoholism. Like, I know none of that, like a lot of that may not even have just made sense, but I think it's so important to realize, like, if I can't show you I understand your thought pattern, then why are you going to do what I do? Like, there's no reason for you to make the changes that I've made if what I've been through, I can't connect to you, right? Like, I can tell you about it all day, but I need to describe it for you so you can take all that evidence and say, oh, yeah, no, I do that too. Oh, yeah, okay, I can see why doing this will help me, right? And that's where this is important. Right? Because if I can't make that connection in my own experience, then what does anything I have to say mean to you? Right? Like if you're upset about your relationships and I can't tell you how I've been upset about my relationships and this is how I've gone about ruining my relationships or trying to control my relationships and show you how that makes sense to me so that what you're doing and what you've experienced makes sense on that line, then why would you make any of these changes that I might suggest, right? And so that's so important. It's so important because it's all the men that have come before that have done that with me that have helped me see why I need to make these changes, why I need to make an effort towards seeking God and connecting to God and having God remove these things so I can build better relationships. Go ahead, John.
So one of the things that I like about the book is when I'm reading the book and it talks about, you know, situations, I think, yeah, you know. You know, like, or if I'm listening to somebody in the rooms and they're talking about a situation, I can think about where it falls in the book. You know, like one of the things that was very helpful to me when I was going through the fourth step with this guy, Jay, down in North Carolina, was he talked about the basic instincts, you know, sex, society, and security. And when these things are hurt or threatened, my natural reaction is to make too big a deal out of these things. And one of the things that was really interesting to me, and he had like all these like diagrams and stuff, and which was very helpful for me to begin to think to how to process and deal with these things. But one of the things he talked about was pride. And I never really thought too much about pride, but he had me write down pride. And then after the word pride, he said, what I think other people think of me. And so when I hear people talking about, and if you begin to listen in the rooms and you'll hear people saying, well, I think that my ex-wife thinks this about me, you know, and I think pride, you know, I felt the same way. And it's normal to have some pride, like this much, not this much, you know, or not this much, you know. Shame is like too little pride. It's the opposite. So so many of these things that we look at and, whether it's, sexual misconduct or, something like that. I'm going through four stuff with guys. I said, I don't really want to talk about this, but, if we need to, we will. And, it took me a long time to be willing to give up some of that stuff. And I literally got on my knees and begged God to take it away. I said, I just can't take it. Please give me some relief from this. And it went, and that can't happen. The change, the basic change in behavior is so beyond anything that I can understand. And I think it's like what you're talking about when you're talking with guys and this type of experience, I've lived this kind of experience and I've lived that to go through the heartbreak of divorce and sobriety and to come out the other side and to be a better man. Like I was today, I was thinking about this. I was near Hillary's work and I was in Dunkin' Donuts. And so I thought, well, I'm going to text her and see if she's got a real busy job, if I could bring her anything. But I didn't hear back from her. So I, it was off the hook and I was on my way. So, what I saw her later on, she said, you texted and I couldn't talk because I was at work. I said, well, I was in the Dunkin' Donuts across the street and I wanted to see if you want anything, like that was a good action. That was a little good inner thing going on there all over a donut. And I find another thing that has come to me over time is that I think different people learn different ways. Not everybody is going to find it as effective to sit one-on-one with somebody and go through the book page by page. I've never done it, either way, as the leader or the follower. I started with the guy who was my sponsor. I thought it was kind of weird for me, and I thought, I don't know, but I'm more like like the marbles in the box, everything's bouncing around and I like to be in a room with a small group of people and where different people are interjecting on the different ideas. And we have a group now that meets on Sunday mornings. It's men. It's our normal meeting 7 to 8, and at 8:15 we stay on the Zoom meeting for an hour, and we read through the book, and we read through these pages this Sunday. I'm sure you probably have. There's no evidence of that in what I've been talking about, but I did spend some time, trying to get ready. But and in fact, Larry, who is kind of Larry's like a he's like an Iron Man big book guy, and I said I want to go over this, skip a paragraph here and everything else. And he said, we're not doing that. We're going to go through, we're going to go right through. And I said, well, I don't want to do that. I want to go through like we're going to do, on Monday. And we went through this three times. And he finally said, okay, John, we'll do whatever you want. I said, Larry, you know what I want. I just told you three times what I want. I want to go through this the way we're going to do it on Monday. Because as many times as I've been through this, it all seems new every time. And so I started with a guy upstairs, kind of one-on-one with James. And then another guy came along, John came up there. And then Larry's mother was ill, and she was in the nursing home behind there. And he started coming. And he had done something like this years before and gotten away. And he was so happy to see something like this again. And so we've been doing this for years, and you know, we have, you know, probably, you know, maybe 9 or 10 people on any given Monday. Sometimes it'll be a little bit more, sometimes it'll be a little bit less. But we have, you know, we're in, a few of us are here in Pennsylvania. We got one guy from New Jersey, one guy from Amsterdam, one guy from Colombia. A lot of these guys met in St. Martin over time. And, you know, they've gone back to wherever they came from. And, you know, we're all connected. And it's like, it's wonderful. It is really cool. And a great variety of backgrounds. So it's, and, you know, new guys come, and, you know, sometimes they stick. This Bob he's sticking around. Tim, this guy, Tim came in. He's in finance, and he's been with us a year. And what's really cool is he's helping other guys. He's taking other guys through the book now. And that's unbelievable when you start seeing that. And you know, and he was just an angry, you know, like really very, you know, like couldn't understand why his wife was pissed that he spent his kids' college tuition. He's, you know, like University of Wisconsin's calling and they want, you know, like what was it, 50 grand or something. He blew it. And somehow the kid got through. I don't know how they did it, but it's and you know, we laugh and we have a good time. And the biggest thing for me was I couldn't stop my head from spinning. I could not stop my head from spinning. And I think Bill Wilson talks about that at some point. My head was spinning. And it's by spending time with my friends in AA and quiet time and prayer and meditation. And it just seems more important. What I do in the morning is I get up, I say a couple of prayers I learned as a child, and I read 3 books. I read the Daily Reflections, the 24-hour-a-day book, and then I read a book that was a guy gave to me, and he has given to some other people. It's called Jesus Calling. It's another daily reader. It's a nice book. Larry, who goes to our meeting, is Jewish, and he reads a book that is by a guy named Abe Twersky, who's a doctor out in Pittsburgh. So, you know, it's all good stuff. We laugh. And, you know, the one guy comes to this Sunday meeting, Greg. Greg is so sick. You know, he's in chemotherapy today. And he has a brother, Mo. And Mo is like so completely trapped in the throes of alcoholism. We've spent days driving him around, getting him, you know, from one place to another, in the hospital, trying to get into rehab. And, you know, and I think of where it talks about you will spend countless hours and lose, you know, all this stuff. And we're, you know, as we're riding along, I'm, you know, let's like whistle while you work. This is our lot in life. You know, we're here to try and carry the message to help some guy who's hopelessly lost. And, you know, it doesn't always work. Sometimes they don't make it at all. And, but we'll see. And the weirdest thing is to have this unbounding enthusiasm and confidence that this could be the day, as bad as it is for this guy. Wouldn't it be great if today is the beginning? And, you know, and if it could happen for me, you know, it could happen to anybody.
Great. Thank you, John. Folks, we are out of time for this evening. Our common welfare, word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Are there any AA-related announcements?
Morgan, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Morgan.
This home group is having a supper and a speaker with a lack of supper since we are virtual, but grab some dinner, hop on. We're going to have Jack D from Baltimore, Maryland, and that is going to be on, I believe it is going to be on April 12th. Am I correct about that? Yeah, I see shaking heads. I don't know why I want to say it's the 5th, even though I know we got another step 12 next week. So hope to see y'all there. Jack D, Baltimore, April 12th, 7 p.m. in this Zoom room. Thank you.
Thanks, Morgan. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. And home group members, please raise your hands. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us, and if you're extra shy, email to us info@simpleactions.net. And this time I'm going to ask everybody to unmute, and let's thank our panel for this evening. Thank you, Grant. Thank you, John, both of you sharing your experience.
Thanks, John. Thanks, Grant.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you both so much.
Thanks,
guys. Thanks. It was great.
Thank you all for being here. Thanks, John.
Thank you for asking me. It's great to be with you guys.
Thanks, guys. Great to hear both of you tonight. And Leanne, would you be willing to read A Vision for You?
My name's Leanne. I'm an alcoholic. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you, Leanne. And thanks everybody for joining us tonight. Thanks again to our panel, Grant and John. Really enjoyed hearing your experience. Let's close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father.
Our Father.
Amen. Woohoo!
Thank you, John.
Thank you all.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, all right, guys.
Thanks, y'all. Thanks, have a good night.
Good job, man.
Thanks, guys.
Good job, Mike.